The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for a suicide bomb attack in the town of Ansbach, Germany, that injured at least 15 people. It is the second time in a week that the group has claimed responsibility for an attack in Germany. Ira Spitzer reports from Berlin.
ISIS released the statement through the Amak news agency, which is closely affiliated with the group. It came after German officials discovered extremist videos on the attacker's cell phone and computer, as well as a pledge of allegiance to the ISIS leader. The attacker was a 27-year-old refugee from Syria who faced deportation to Bulgaria. He had tried to kill himself at least two times and had received psychological treatment. After being denied entry to a music festival, he blew himself up outside the venue, wounding 15 people, three of them seriously. Ira Spitzer, Berlin.
The FBI has launched a probe into whether Russia was behind a computer hack attack on the servers of America's Democratic Party. Leaked emails have led to the resignation of a top party official, just as the Democrats are gathering in Philadelphia for their party convention. And from there, our U.S. correspondent Simon Marks reports.
The FBI says it wants to find out who hacked into the Democrats' email and passed the incriminating documents on to WikiLeaks. Clinton campaign manager Roby Mook senses the dark hand of Vladimir Putin.
Russian state actors were feeding the emails to hackers for the purpose of helping Donald Trump.
The emails revealed some party officials tried to scupper Bernie Sanders' bid for the presidency. He'll speak here later, and despite the revelations, is calling for party unity. Simon Marks, Philadelphia.
Senator Bernie Sanders has told his delegates to the Democratic convention that the resignation of party chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz creates the possibility of real change.
Her resignation opens up the possibility of new leadership at the top of the Democratic Party that will stand with working people.
Two people have been killed and 16 others injured after a mass shooting outside a nightclub in Fort Myers, Florida. The club was hosting an event for teenagers, and the victims range in age from 12 to 27. Our U.S. correspondent Kevin McAleese reports.
One of the two confirmed dead is thought to be a 14-year-old boy with at least one other victim in critical condition. The young partygoers were being picked up early Monday morning in the parking lot of the Club Blue venue when gunfire erupted. Fort Myers police also responded to two other incidents in the Florida city. Local law enforcement have detained a number of people, but it's unclear whether or not they were directly linked to the mass shooting. No motive has yet been reported. Kevin McAleese, Washington.
A woman in Spain has given birth to a baby with microcephaly. She was infected with Zika virus, and it's the first confirmed case of birth defects tied to the Zika virus in Europe. This is FSN.
Thank you, Priscilla Hoff. The Zika virus has got nothing to do with microcephaly. That's nonsense, that. I hope you've had a good weekend. It is Monday, July 25th, 2016. I've had a cracking weekend myself. My name is Richie Allen. Let's do it. Let's crack on with the show.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And Russia have nothing to do with WikiLeaks revelations about Hillary Clinton either. They'll blame Russia for anything. Somebody slips on a banana peel. It's got to be Russia these days. Hope all is good with you. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email Richie at richieallen.co.uk. Richard Sauder is my guest tonight. He's a man who wrote several best-selling books on underground and underwater bases and tunnels, including Hidden in Plain Sight. Now, Richard was on the program back in January. He's not specifically going to be returning to the subject of underground bases. What we want to talk about tonight is reality. What is it? And whether so-called real reality has been massively hijacked by a false, fraudulent reality in which we are now immersed. Richard Sauder joins the program little bit later this hour, and then he's going to stay with me right till the end. the end, my friend. Yeah, Richard Sauder, that's going to be a good one, that. Thought he might have been back a little bit earlier on the programme than he was, but you know the way it is. But he's back today. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. I might have just said that, but I've said it again. Do, of course, check out our broadcast partners, alternatecurrentradio.com and fabradiointernational.com. We're on davidicke.com as well, davidicke.com/headlines. Stay with that. Bookmark that website. I think you should do that. David, of course, is in Australia at the moment. He was in Brisbane at the weekend. It was a triumphant success. He's on to Melbourne. I think, in fact, he's already landed in Melbourne. Indeed, he has done, I'm just being told. Wonderful success so far. There's a worldwide wake-up tour. Great for him. He deserves all that success. If you can make it to Melbourne, there are a few tickets. And as you can see by the photographs of the venues and the videos, all of these events sell out. All of them. Okay? But in the days beforehand, there's always one or two tickets to be found. Go to theworldwidewakeup.com. Monday means a brand new healing meditation from the lovely and the brilliant Kim Hutchison. So we'll have a power of healing meditation, which will follow this programme directly after me. Don't go anywhere. Kim will be here. And I want to say a massive thanks. And I can't find new ways of thanking people like Mark Bayersky and Patricia Braunschweiler. Mark Bayersky, lovely man. You've heard him on the programme before. Today he auctioned a beautiful healing crystal for the programme, and it was bought by the wonderful Patricia Braunschweiler, who's a big supporter of this programme as well. Thanks to Mark and Patricia. I can't say any more than that. Wonderful people. Go to markbayersky.com. Okay, so Mark Bayersky. Bayersky is spelt with a J, so it's B-A-J-E-R-S-K-I. markbayersky.com. The man has asked for nothing in return for supporting the independent media. I want him back on the show real soon because he's a great guy, is Mark. And thanks again to Patricia. So let's move on then. Let's chat about some of the big stories making the news today. Well, overnight in the United States, you might have heard Patricia Huff there on the news talking about the fact that two people were killed and maybe as many as 20 injured in a shooting at a nightclub in the city of Fort Myers in Florida. So it happened at about 4:30 in the morning British time, 12:30 there, or more like 11:30 there. Wouldn't it be? Isn't there 5 hours difference? At Club Blue, which was hosting a party for teenagers. Apparently there were 12-year-olds there. What the hell are 12-year-olds doing past midnight at a club hosting a party for teenagers? I don't understand it. There was an 18-year-old killed, a 14-year-old lad killed as well. That's terribly tragic, that. The victims of the attack, the ones injured, range between 12 and 27 years old. There was no clear link between the shootings and terrorism. You probably heard that. So that's a distressing thing. Now, Annie Machon, formerly of MI5, and the former partner of our mate David Shaler, Annie's been speaking with RT about the Florida shooting overnight, but also the recent shootings. And she said, did Annie Machon, that a targeted form of surveillance is needed and not an overall increase in surveillance of the general population. But I was very interested in one or two other things Annie Machon had to say.
Certainly. I mean, there was a shooting, what, 3-4 weeks ago in Orlando, Florida, at a gay nightclub. So, yes, one would assume that the security provisions would have been tightened up. However, it's very difficult to track and stop, you know, the lone attacker, the lone wolf, if they are minded to do something. We've seen this across Europe as well, very much so over the last few weeks with the Nice attack and the machete attack in Germany and the suicide attack in Germany only yesterday, as well as another lone wolf shooter in Germany. So there seems to be a sort of an uprising of these types of attacks, and perhaps they almost feed off each other. And it's very easy for our governments to jump to conclusions and say, well, it must be terrorism, or it must be this, it must be that. But perhaps it's just the fact that the visibility of these attacks are increasing, and it is encouraging more, perhaps, mentally vulnerable people to think along these lines too.
I'm sorry to say that Annie Machon is way off the pace there. That the visibility of these attacks is encouraging others. Mentally ill people are susceptible to the visibility of these attacks, and they are doing them. Well, no, Annie Masha knows a lot better than that. I've had her on shows, including this show, over the years. I really don't know what's going on there with her. Talking about lone wolf attacks, as if they are understandable, at least in the way that they are portrayed on the mainstream media. No, they're not. We know why these things are really happening. A bit intrigued about that. I'm going to drop her an email. Now, Matt Damon, good actor, probably well-intentioned guy, Matt Damon. I don't know anything about him, really. He's in Britain this week promoting his new Jason Bourne movie. Speaking of films, don't waste £10 or £11 on Star Trek Beyond. It is garbage. So bad is it that after an hour, the future Mrs. Allen and I had to leave. And I'm a fan of the new films. Dreadful claptrap. Absolute nonsense summer film. No plot, no interest, rubbish. Anyway, back to Matt Damon. So he's got a new Jason Bourne movie. It's probably the same as all the rest of them. And he was speaking with Andrew Marr yesterday on the BBC. The interview took place before today's shooting in Florida. But Matt Damon had this to say about mass shootings.
Well, I mean, first of all, what I said was we can't have a sensible conversation about it, which is true, because it's so intensely personal for us.
The idea of not allowing people with on the watch list to pick
right,
up
that's just been
guns.
Voted down. Yeah. Right. So to give you an idea of how, you know, it's we have to try to figure out a way to try to keep guns out of the hands of people like Adam Lanza, right? Mm. This guy in Sandy Hook, and you know, without infringing on people's Second Amendment rights. Mm. Sandy Hook was horrific, and if that didn't do it, I don't know what would, right?
Mm. You're still far more likely to be killed in your car on the road in the United States than killed in a mass shooting or any shooting. In fact, I think I read something in the Washington Post about 5 years ago, so it's a bit out of date, but I think it said something like, you're more likely to be hit by a falling grand piano and driven into the ground by it than being killed in a mass shooting event. And somebody please get Matt Damon a link to any interview with Wolfgang Halbig, by the way. Not necessarily my interviews with Wolfgang, but any interview by Wolfgang Halbig, of course, the former Florida State Trooper and National School Safety Inspector, who has proved beyond a doubt, Wolfgang Halbig, that Sandy Hook is a complete and utter hoax. Utter hoax. If you're hearing this for the first time, check out Wolfgang Halbig on YouTube. Go to the Richie Allen YouTube channel, minded by our own Simon Stewart, and you'll find a couple of interviews there with Wolfgang. So it's been a crazy week in Germany then. We heard yesterday that a Syrian asylum seeker blew himself up outside a music festival in Bavaria and injured 15 people. Now, the BBC reported today that the man who did this made a video pledging allegiance to the leader of the so-called Islamic State. Who told us that? Well, Bavaria's interior minister, a man called Joachim Herrmann. And he said two phones, multiple SIM cards and a laptop were found with the body of the 27-year-old asylum seeker or at his accommodation. Right. The man threatened a revenge attack on Germans in the video. Islamic State said it was behind the attack and that the Syrian was an IS soldier. I bet you Paul Joseph Watson of InfoWars is making hay while the sun shines with that one. And Angela Merkel allowing a million migrants into Germany. And George Soros, of course, saying that Europe should allow millions of migrants into the continent from Syria and elsewhere. 15 people were injured, 4 of them seriously. The device went off close to a music festival near Nuremberg. He said, in the name of Allah, in the video, that he pledged allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, allegedly the kingpin or the linchpin of ISIS. And he said it was an act of revenge against Germans because they were standing in the way of Islam. nice and tidy, nice and neat. They found everything at the apartment, the instructions on how to build bombs and all of that. This guy's asylum was turned down a year ago, but he hadn't been returned to Syria because of fears for his safety. That's what I can gather today. Of course, we heard already 9 people were killed by a teenage gunman in Munich on Friday, but he wasn't jihadist inspired, at least they're telling us. He was obsessed with mass shootings and Anders Breivik and all of that. And a number of independent media outlets, including DavidIke.com, are saying that it looks like Richard Gutjahr, who was mentioned on this programme last week by none other than Garod O'Kulmán, Richard Gutjahr, the same man who filmed or photographed the Nice truck attack, was also in Munich filming that. What are the odds? DavidIke.com and others are asking. How could he be in two places at the same time? Well, he is married to a leading Israeli black operator. We know this. Garod O'Kulmán mentioned this on the programme last week. Her name is Einat Wilf, a former Israeli intelligence officer. That's the wife of Richard Gutjahr, who appears to have been in Nice and also appears to have been in Munich. There you go. I don't know what to say about that. So back to yesterday's end, and they haven't named the failed asylum seeker who blew himself up yet. I don't know why they haven't named him, but they haven't. But the police finding the video at the complex where he was staying is nice and handy, isn't it? Ties it all up in a nice bow, doesn't it? Do you know what I was thinking today, dear listener, and I'd love to get your opinion on this. Why wouldn't he have bought a ticket for the festival when the tickets went on sale, or at least later on bought one from a scalper, as you guys say in America, or from a tout, as we say here in Britain? Why wouldn't he have bought a ticket? If he wanted to commit maximum damage, why would he blow himself up outside the venue because he couldn't get in? Are we supposed to believe he was stupid enough to think he couldn't get in without a ticket? I mean, if you're going to make a bomb and take such a big risk as doing that and plan to kill loads of people, you would have made it into the venue, wouldn't you? I would have thought so. Anyway, ah well. And also, of course, over the weekend, a Syrian refugee killed a pregnant woman with a machete and injured 2 others in the city of Reutlingen. Now, that's utterly bizarre, that. If a Syrian refugee was motivated by jihadist philosophies, wanted to kill people, as evil as he might be, is he going to start chopping away at a woman who's pregnant with a machete? Is that going to be the first target? This happened at a kebab, not shop, but one of these carts, you know, in Reutlingen as well over the weekend. There's a lot of madness going on, isn't there? There's a lot of madness. And on the madness and on the inconsistencies, by the way, there is something I wanted to tell you about. I've got to scroll down a bit here. You got to bear with me. You got to bear with me now just a minute. But it's a story that we shared on our Facebook page today, and it relates to the Nice attack. And this is the story. This is utterly bizarre, this. The French Interior Minister, Bernard Cazeneuve, he has said today that he's going to sue a senior police officer for libel. Now, he's the Interior Minister. He's going to sue a French police officer for libel. Why, you ask, why? Well, her name is Sandra Berton. She was in charge of security cameras where the Nice terror attack happened, where the guy drove through the crowd. She said she was told to report the presence of national police units, although she hadn't seen them. Why would somebody insist that she do that? And fair play to her for coming out, by the way, and saying it. I was told to report something I didn't see. 80 people died. Well, 84 people died, apparently, last Bastille Day, July 14th. She said she was instructed by an Interior Ministry official to report the presence of national police units on the promenade des Anglais at the time of the attack. She said they might have been there, but I couldn't see them on the video. She said she was harassed for an hour by Monsieur Cazeneuve, on the phone. Why would he do that? Why would he do that? And for all the bitching we do about the BBC, fair play to them for reporting that today. you know. Curiouser and curiouser and curiouser. I'm not going to belabor the point. We have a very strong opinion on why these things happen. These are mass trauma events. Traumatize the public into screaming, please stop these things from happening. We will do anything so long as you can stop these things happening. And of course, us doing anything is letting the authorities do whatever they bloody well want. But the other side of this is to turn us against one another. It's to foster division. While they deliberately, how many times am I going to say this bloody thing? And I know you're sick of listening to it. You don't need me to be starting off on a Monday with this shit that you've heard a million times before. But there are new people listening to this all of the time. An intended consequence of the chaos in the Middle East is the migrant crisis. It's all about divide and rule. Ultimately, that's what it's all about. And yes, of course, there will be lunatics within the flow of migrants. There's no doubt about that. So you have genuine terror, terrorist. God, I don't want to start sounding like these people. You have genuine terrorists. They're probably in the minority. Most of these things are false flag attacks where the intelligence agencies hire lunatic contract killers to do these things and blame them on jihadists. But of course, there are genuine jihadist attacks as well. And then, of course, there are the hoax attacks where nobody dies at all. Sandy Hook. RT ran this story about Manchester, the great city of Manchester. Have a listen to this. It's totally bizarre. It's about Islam and dogs. Yes, your canine furry companions in Manchester. Listen carefully to this.
Man's best friend isn't popular with everyone in the English city of Manchester in northern England. It would seem dog owners have been given leaflets telling them to keep their pets off the streets for religious reasons. The handouts were published by a movement called For Public Purity. It claims the area's got a large Muslim community who would be upset by seeing the pets, which are considered impure in Islam, too often. But it's unclear, actually, who's behind these leaflets. A Facebook page bearing the name of the movement on the handouts doesn't contain any contact information. The campaign stirred reaction online, though, with calls emerging for a mass dog walk now through Manchester, some even insisting on making sure the route passes through predominantly Muslim areas. But many think it was a provocation by Islamophobes.
It might have been. It's hard to know what's going on there. It does sound like something a Britain First supporter would do. To stir a bit of shit, basically. It could also be even more sinister and have intelligence agency fingerprints on it, divide and rule. Now, my opinions are my opinions, and I'm not scared to share my opinions. I don't see those of the Muslim faith, those who pursue the Islamic ideology as their religion, going around posting leaflets telling people not to bring their dogs outside. I just don't see that happening in Manchester. We're in an area here with a moderate to sizable Asian population. We have Pakistanis, Sikhs, we have Indian men, women and children. And while it's fair to say, and this is my opinion again, is that people from the subcontinent and the continent of Asia have a different outlook on dogs as pets. You know, we've met people before from Afghanistan here, we've met people from Pakistan, and they talk about, you know, dogs are working animals. Same in Spain, actually. Spanish people can tend to, and I can't totally generalise, but they can tend to being a bit standoffish with dogs. They see them as working animals. And it's the same with many countries in Asia and in the sub-continent, sub-Sahara, I suppose. When we meet folks, though, from, you know, the Pakistani community or the Asian community or the Indian community, they generally are pretty curious about our dog and are pretty friendly towards us. So I think it's mischief making by somebody putting those leaflets. Again, it's all about divide and conquer. 24 minutes past the hour. I was thinking while listening to the news there that Hillary Clinton is so corrupt and so sinister, I'm beginning to like her. No, I'm not. I'm not really. Listen to this from Ortiz the Resident about insider trading with Hillary Clinton smack bang in the middle of it. Ortiz have been trawling through Hillary's emails and they found this information this woman, if she was to be tried for all her crimes, I think she'd have to serve 77 consecutive, not consecutive, concurrent life sentences. Listen to this from Ortiz, the resident.
You might recall a few years ago, Greece was in a major debt crisis, launching the largest sovereign debt default in history. Clinton was Secretary of State at the time, and her emails have a lot to say about how Secretary Crooked handled it. Because at the same time, Chelsea Clinton's husband, Crooked's son-in-law, Mark Mizvinsky, was coincidentally creating a $325 million basket of offshore funds with the help of Goldman Sachs. Those funds were used to place bets on what would happen in Greece. And gosh, wouldn't you know, he was placing those bets at the same time Crooked, as Secretary of State, was sharing lots of classified information about what was going on in Greece through her private email server. She shared classified information with her Clinton Foundation cronies about what the actual leaders of Greece were saying, information at the highest level. She also emailed sensitive State Department information about Greek bonds with her husband, at the same time her son-in-law was targeting his hedge fund at Greece. In other words, she was emailing classified information about the Greek bailout to family and friends at the same time her son-in-law was placing multi-million dollar bets on what would happen in Greece.
Hitler's son-in-law made a fortune on the Greek debt crisis because she was emailing him classified information. What more does this woman need to do before she's banged up? Oh. Remanded to the custody of the state of New York until or pending a trial. Jesus Christ almighty. You know, they've earmarked this woman a long time ago to be the next president. I know a few of you on Twitter are saying that old Donald there is a, said for me, old Donald is a stalking horse for Hitlery. Tommy, how you doing, Tommy? Richie, I lived in Spain for 8 years, Torreblanca, near the Caribbean Bar in Torreblanca. I never travelled on the Costa Blanca. The Spanish don't generally treat dogs at all well, says Tommy. I totally agree. You might be a bit harsh there, Tommy. I think that they're more used to seeing dogs, as I said, as working animals. But yeah, the what would you call them, the pounds, the dog shelters on the Costa del Sol and on the Costa Blanca are completely full to capacity all the time. There's no doubt about that. Thanks to all of you tweeting so far. Go to Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in there. Press enter and you can read other people's tweets. Hi to Martin, to Wayne, to Faisal, to Hubertus, to Scott Cornish. How you doing there, Scott? And to Karen Kelly as well. Everybody who's listening. Huge interest, I think, in Richard Soder. To John Brown, who's listening live for a change. Thanks, John. Mark Richards, how you doing, Mark? Loads of comments on there. Follow what other people are saying and then engage them in a bit of friendly debate. And don't call people an effing muppet. Whatever you do, it's totally wrong. It is wrong, by the way. I'm not being sarcastic or taking the mickey there. I got to say hi to Claire Calvi, my producer, who is listening live. She has relocated back to the Republic of Ireland. She's in the West. Family are settling down there. Good to know that all is well with the Calvi family. Got some music for you. In fact, no, I don't. I've got a break back in a minute. I'll try that again, will I? That's a Monday thing, that. Let's try that again. Break back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Welcome back to the programme. It's the Richie Allen Show for Monday, July the 25th, if I said that right. The 25th, that's right. Of July, yeah, 25th of July 2016. Multitasking here as I'm chatting with you. There you go, I've done that. Great stuff. Now, Richard Sauder is standing by. He's going to be live in a couple of minutes. Let's get him on then. Jonathan Brown sent me an email to say Star Trek wasn't so bad. It wasn't the best ever, Richie, but it was a new episode, says Jonathan. Jonathan, we ran out of the cinema. We're not the most impatient people that ever lived, but we ran out of the cinema after an hour and 5 minutes. Horses for courses and all of that. Welcome to the show, Richie Allen Show, broadcasting on ACR, alternatecurrentradio.com, fabradiointernational.com, and of course davidicke.com. Back with Richard Sauder after this. Song called This Girl from Kungs on the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com for Monday. If you're just joining us, you're very welcome. You're also very lucky. Our only guest this evening is standing by. He's a top man. Can't wait to chat with him again. He was on the show back in January and he was brilliant. He is the author of several best-selling books, including Hidden in Plain Sight. He's a verifiable expert on underground and underwater bases and tunnels. His work is absolutely vital. From a very early age, he experienced contact with a variety of paranormal phenomena that set him on his way, I suppose, on the path that led him to doing what he does, but also convinced him that there is much more to the earth and to our perception and consciousness, and much more than the culture would have you believe. That's the culture everywhere, not just in America, but here as well. I'm going to tweet out, and I did share this earlier on today, a recent blog post by him. It's absolutely fantastic, and it's all about our reality. The reality we inhabit, what we believe to be real, and whether the actual reality, what really is our consciousness, our lives, has that been replaced by a fraudulent reality in which we are now immersed. Thrilled to welcome back to the programme the great Richard Sauder. Richard, welcome back. How are you? And after that amazing introduction there, he's not there, I don't think. I don't know why that is, because we are connected. I wonder, has he not got his microphone switched on? That could be it. We'll try him again and we'll see, is he there? Exactly 26 minutes to the top of the hour. I must mention, of course, if there's anything you want me to say to Richard, you can tweet it at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. We might just be having a wee problem connecting to Richard there. I hope he's there now. We'll find out fairly shortly. Let's say good evening, Richard Sauder. Richard? No. There's a problem with the internet connection between us. We're trying to get it back, says the old people there at Skype. So the sensible thing to do, I suppose, at this stage is to take some more music. And we'll do it all again then in a minute, all right? That's the way these things go. So we'll have some music. Why do these things only happen on a Monday, eh? Right, I'm hoping we have connected with Richard Sauder now, so let's welcome him to the programme. Richard, I think we finally connected. How are you?
Fine, Richie. I can barely hear you. You're very broken up.
That's a strange one now, because we're at full power here in terms of connectivity and stuff, Richard. I don't know what's happening there. I wonder, is there an issue with your own bandwidth, maybe? Right, he's struggling to hear me there, is Richard. This is not going to work this way, so we're going to have to find another way to do it, I'm afraid. In the meantime, we're going to take a very quick break back, hopefully with a solution, in a minute's time. Monday, Monday.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com. For free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Right, welcome back to the programme. We're going to try Richard one more time. Failing that, right, we're going to have to do a phone call, or we're going to have to call it for today. Richard, I hope we've got a better connection now. No, we don't, by the sounds of it. If you're just joining the show, we're hoping to connect with Richard Sauder. Richard's not in the US. I think he's in Central America or South America. I'm hoping he's not got bandwidth issues now at this time of the day. Richard, are you there? No, we're going to have to call this, I'm afraid, folks. We can either do this over the phone now, or we ain't going to do it at all. We'll have to come up with something else. There's always a plan B, though. There's always a plan B when it comes to the Richie Allen Show. All righty.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now. Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the program. One of those things we're struggling with, Richard Sauder. This is a real problem, this. And it's very unfortunate, and there's very little can be done about it at the moment. I think if we try and phone him, it's going to be me phoning a cell phone in South America, and that's going to be a disaster. So I'm not even going to do that. So failing that, we're probably going to have to move on there. Richard is in Ecuador, you see, Ecuador. So we're just going to have to see, can he get to a landline or can he get a better connection? And failing that, dear friend, we're just going to have to, as I said, come up with something else at the last minute. Loads of tweets too and loads of emails about Richard and what he was going to say. Hugely fascinating subject, this, of course, the nature of reality. What we see, is it real? Is it not real? Is it does it exist only because we look at it? Supporters of David Icke, and particularly those who are going to see him at the moment on the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, will get to see and get to hear a lot about the nature even of reality and this particular subject. So at the moment, it's not looking marvellous for Richard Sauder. Oh, that's a Monday. And you know, I'll tell you this, and I'm not telling you a word of a lie. Just after 7 p.m, so less than an hour or two airtime, the main computer, which plays out the programme effectively and carries the sounds, carries the Skype call, and the phones are connected to that computer. It's a new computer, because you might remember about 7 or 8 weeks ago, the old computer blew up. That computer started going black. The screen started going black for no reason. And I thought to myself, Jesus Christ, don't start this now on a Monday. But I ran a couple of diagnostics, and whatever was wrong with it, well, it kind of fixed itself. It seems to have fixed itself by itself anyway. I said, all right, that's a bullet dodged. We'll get the show on the road anyway. We'll get on air tonight. The last thing in the world I wanted to do was to be telling you tonight we can't do a show. So that was all right. I know we're having this problem with Richard, who I think has even gone offline now, such is the difficulty he's having with his connectivity there. So I apologise for this. I know there's, you know, our listenership is big. We know that. But there's always, when people like Richard Sauder comes on, you know, people who listen to the podcast and the YouTube videos, they make that extra effort to listen live. So I know we have a bigger audience for this than we might have on another Monday. So failing Richard getting to a better place and a better connection, there's nothing I can do. Interestingly enough, though, on the blog, which is at eventhorizonchronicle.blogspot.co.uk, there's a very interesting quote from Richard Sauder. He was asked by a friend of his about the flat earth, funnily enough. Now, I've not been very kind in the past about the flat earth theory. Well, when I say I've not been kind, I've not been rude either. I don't buy it. The earth is round. At least as we perceive it, anyway. Maybe, I suppose, if you want to be really deep about it, you can probably say, well, if you perceive the earth to be flat, well, then it will be flat, if you perceive it that way. I don't know. But anyway, one of Richard's friends asked him about that. And Richard said to his friend, we are in some kind of multi-layered, multi-dimensional virtual reality. It is very hard to figure out its true dimensions and purpose, and to get one's personal bearings. Every time that you think you have it figured out, you discover that there is yet another level of illusion, of deceit, seemingly in a never-ending process. It's an insidious maze, said Richard Sauder to his friend. And that's part of this blog, which I'm going to tweet out there for you now in a second. In fact, I'll do it now while I'm chatting to you. And I'll read one or two tweets as well. So I've just tweeted out Richard's blog, so you can read that. So read out one or two tweets, take some music, and sadly, move on. Danny Warden, Danny, how are you? Welcome to the programme. Wanted to know what Richard thinks, or when he thinks, the new epoch will arrive, as mentioned by David Icke as well. Wayne tweets that culture is the fraud, the construct, false ideas, false beliefs, indoctrinations which take us away from our sovereignty. I suppose you can throw religion into that as well. Although you always have to be careful with people. I know I often say on the programme, you don't have to be careful. You know, you should say what it is you feel. you know. So if I feel that religion is ludicrous, and I do, I know where religious doctrine comes from. I know where the stories come from. So I think it is ludicrous to follow it and to believe the dying rising sun myth. We know where all that came from. But I'm also mindful of the fact. I'm also mindful of the fact that when you want to reach people, you can't be ramming things down people's throats and insulting them and telling them that you're right and you know more than them. Some very close friends and some very close family of mine are believers and are Christians and are Catholics and are devout Catholics and attend Mass, as we say in Ireland. They like a nice Mass every Sunday. It's not for me to be telling them they're idiots. First of all, I don't think they are idiots. You know, but it's not for me to be telling them that what they've believed forever is wrong. You got to be a bit more subtle with it, I suppose, is what I'm saying. Right, 15 minutes to the top of the hour. For the moment, more music. You'll probably hear more music now than you've heard for a long time. More music, back then, and I'll have a clearer plan. I'll have a defined plan for the rest of the programme. Do you believe me? Are you buying it? Oh, this is the sort of thing you used to dread when you started on live radio years ago. Ah, I couldn't care less now, though. Because what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. This is the Mock Turtles on the Richie Allen Show. Come on! For a Monday, either Richard Souter will be with me or somebody else will be with me in a few minutes. Or maybe I'll open the phones. Might do that as well. This is Can You Dig It on the Richie Allen Show.
Can't.
Yeah, the mock turtles, can you dig it on the Richie Allen Show? Richard Sauder is very upset, and I don't blame him. He's gutted. He said, Richie, somebody doesn't want this interview to happen. It's happened before this. It's got to do with the content of what we would have talked about, says Richard. And his Skype has been going on and off and on and off. And even though he is in South America, he's very surprised that it's happening today, when at his time, it's not exactly peak time for people using the internet. And I can't call him because he's on a cell phone. It's just going to be a disaster in terms of coverage there. So he said, I'll tell you what he said. He said, fuck those fuckers. Right. You just have to smile and get through it. Anyway, coming up in 10 minutes time, as the great James H. Fetzer joins me live from Madison, Wisconsin. I just dropped Jim a line, told him that there was a gap in the programme. I'm quite happy to waffle on and bore the absolute bejesus out of my audience, but they deserve better. They deserve better. I think if Terry Wogan, God love him, and one of the great broadcasters of all time, whatever your opinion might have been on Terry Wogan and David Icke and all of that, Terry Wogan was an outstanding exponent of broadcasting, one of the all-time greats. And I often think of him when things go belly up, because he's very good. He was always very good when things went wrong. So comfortable was he doing what he did. So there you are. So it's 9 minutes at the top of the hour's end. And Jim Fetzer is going to join me in a few minutes, which is wonderful. Around about the top of the hour, Jim will join us. I won't bother taking news. So much we can talk about. We've not obviously planned this, so Jim is just going to jump in. So we can get into pretty much anything. We'll have a kind of a free-for-all with Jim. You can, of course, put questions to me, to put to Jim, as usual, on Twitter or on email. So it's richie@richieallen.co.uk. Shall I have a quick news roundup, shall I, in the next couple of minutes? Just in case you're joining the programme. It was a very interesting story the BBC are running in the last couple of hours. I suppose it's interesting if you are a supporter of Jeremy Corbyn and you want Jeremy Corbyn to retain his position as the leader of the Labour Party. Now, an MP who quit his front bench. Now, the government has a cabinet full of ministers and secretaries. The Secretary of State is the senior minister, and then you have other ministers, right? So at the moment, you have Amber Rudd. She's the Home Office Secretary. She's the Home Secretary, in fact. Yes, Rich, get it right. She's the Home Secretary, of course, right? Who else have you got? Well, Philip Hammond. He's the Chancellor now, isn't he? He's the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Right. So the opposition party, the main opposition party, they have a shadow minister, a shadow secretary to shadow each of the government cabinet secretaries, right? Right, you know that, right? Okay. Now, Jeremy Corbyn has got a very threadbare front bench, shadow bench, because a lot of the MPs have deserted him and they passed the motion of no confidence in him a couple of weeks ago. And in fact, it's left some of his front bench shadow cabinet ministers doing two and three jobs because he can't fill the positions, right? So the BBC are reporting today that Sarah Champion, who's an MP for Rotherham, she has unresigned as shadow minister for preventing child abuse and domestic violence. Unresigned. She's on an overseas trip, but her office confirmed she had retaken her old job, even though when she resigned last month, she said Corbyn and his leadership had become untenable. She's unresigned. Jeremy's having her back in the shadow cabinet. The BBC's Norman Smith said this was a truly extraordinary development. The political editor of the BBC, the assistant political editor of the BBC, Smith, said that Corbyn's advisers were overjoyed and said it raised the prospect of whether the MP was a one-off or whether others who walked out of the Labour leaders' front bench were now having second thoughts. It's extraordinary what's going on. It's a big soap opera, a big drama. I said this to you, didn't I, a couple of weeks back, I said it last week, massive drama going on there. And it's meant to suck you in, get you involved in it. It's almost like an episode of a soap. That's what it is. Here's an extraordinary story. And it's about, I don't think I can play the audio now. I might play it a bit later on, or I might save it for tomorrow. But apparently a teenage girl in Nottinghamshire was arrested at school by the police over claims of bullying. Nottinghamshire police said that they have received complaints about the arrest. So a schoolgirl was taken out of a school in Nottinghamshire over claims that she was a bully. She was arrested by the police. I tell you what, that's not very fun, that is it? I've only got half the story here because the text has disappeared from the screen. But kind of on the fly, this is the girl speaking. Teenage girl arrested at a school in Nottinghamshire over allegations of bullying. Have a listen to this.
In front of the whole school, down the main drive, and there's two police officers, two male police officers waiting for me. I barely get to say anything and they just jump down my throat, you've been arrested.
Yeah, she was arrested at school. She was 16 when this happened. And the police have received a complaint about it, but that's all they're saying. They won't say any more about it. It's the sort of thing we've heard about so many times in the United States. We've even seen videos of police officers dragging kids out and jumping on them and arresting them in front of their classmates. Going to follow that one up, and I'm going to track down the parents of that young girl. So you're with the Richie Allen Show, then, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. Dreadfully sorry that Richard Sauder won't be joining the programme today. Terrible thing. Nothing can be done about that. He was due to speak to us. He was there, but problems with his connectivity in Ecuador, even though when we spoke to him back in January from Ecuador, it was absolutely fine. When I spoke with him earlier on, it was absolutely fine. There were no issues. We do test these things all the time, you see. We don't leave them to the last minute kind of a thing. But that's just the way it is. Nothing we can do about it, unfortunately. Right. Right, Stevie Wonder then. Bit of Stevie Wonder. And when we come back from that, a completely rejigged and rehashed Richie Allen Show, we'll see Jim Fetzer join me live from Madison, Wisconsin. Talk about working on the fly, eh?
Let us not.
Stevie Wonder on the Richie Allen Show. Superstition, what a song that is. It's exactly the top of the hour. Can't say the time, of course, because you could be listening to the podcast or the YouTube video. Richard Sauter, due to be on the programme. All sorts of problems there in Ecuador for Richard. What a shame that is. But what a replacement we have. And what a sport as well to do it at the last minute. My guest this hour will be jumping into the hot seat at the last minute is none other than the terrific James H. Fetzer. Jim Fetzer, you're some sport, you know that. Welcome back to the programme. Thanks very much for jumping in.
Richie, it's my great pleasure. I mean, I love your show and I'm delighted to fill in.
You're one of the busiest guys in the world, so it was just a kind of an off chance. You're the first name I saw it of, and you obviously are, by the way, because it's only a few minutes ago that poor old Richard in South America there had to cry off. And I thought, I wonder, is Jim online? I know you're busy. I said, I'll try him there in Wisconsin, see where he is. And there you are. I could be giving you a resume all day, by the way. Jim has written dozens and dozens, hundreds of articles. And he's written nearly two dozen books, of course, on computer science, on critical thinking. He's an academic. I suppose he's like a bionic academic, is this man. We first heard about Jim many years ago. It's many years, Jim. It's 15 years this year since September the 11th. It's amazing, Jim. Huh? And the first time I came across you, of course, was when you were going hammer and tongs with Fox News anchors trying to embarrass you because you were asking very serious questions about 9/11. And of course, they failed to embarrass you. Wonderful. I'll never forget as long as I live when Sean Hannity expressed surprise at something you'd said and you turned it back on him and said, well, I'm surprised that you would be surprised, Sean. And you threw all these wonderful facts about 9/11 in his face. And eventually they do what they do. They become hostile and rude because that's all they can do. Of course, it's the first time I heard of you. And only a couple of years later, then we did our first chat on radio. And we've been talking ever since.
If we count second edition, I now have 33 books.
33
Richie,
books,
with,
Jim, yeah.
Number 34 on 9/11 about to appear. Because Amazon bounced, banned my first book on Sandy Hook. You won't find it there, but rather at moonrockbooks.com.
Isn't it funny you mentioned Sandy Hook? Matt Damon, the actor, of course, who's in Britain promoting his latest film. I think Matt Damon is probably a decent guy, Jim, but I think, like a lot of people, he's just not educated himself. I don't want to in any way insult him because he's probably a much brighter guy than I am, but he's not educated himself. And he was speaking to Andrew Marr on the BBC yesterday, and he cited Sandy Hook as a reason why we have to have some sort of dialogue about guns. Now, he said he's not in favour of gun control at all, he said. He said that people should have the right to bear arms. The Second Amendment is very important. But he said we should have a discussion about how certain people get guns. Now, I don't think he's a shill at all. I think he's just an actor. And he's a very, very wealthy man. He's got an easy life and he hasn't looked into it. But Sandy Hook, Jim, I mean, holy mother of Jesus and all of that. If ever there was an absolute staged event, an event that didn't happen, Sandy Hook is it, isn't it?
Well, you got it. You got it, Richie, because we not only had the evidence at the time and proof that the school had been closed by 2008, it was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards and had been severely damaged by hurricane. They had to confront the decision of whether or not to upgrade it to conform with Americans for Disability Act requirements. That would have been a major overhaul, Richie. So they simply abandoned the school. Actually, if you just look at an aerial photograph of the parking lot, you can tell already that this is a fraud because there's none of the familiar blue and white parking, none of the blue and white signage for a handicapped parking. That means it couldn't have legally operated as a school. Also, the ground temperature that day was 28 degrees Fahrenheit, but there's no heat or steam rising from the building. The boilers were so old, Richie, that they couldn't light them up, so that the school was just stone cold, which makes the whole thing completely ridiculous. Plus, if you look at the center rows of parking, all the vehicles are parked facing the building, even though by the driving instructions, you'd come in off of Dickinson Drive, take a right, curl around and park facing away. But Richie, it was so much simpler since they were just going to be props to bring them in a single file and fill them in two by two by two by two you know, and so even the parking lot reveals this was an enormous scam.
Jim, help me. You know that we go out on mainstream platforms. You know that. In fact, over the years, you've been very good because to keep people in mind that are very sceptical, I've often had a little niggle at you over the years, but you're very well able for that. You don't mind that. I'm certainly not going to have a niggle at you today, my friend. How do we explain to people, Jim? How do we explain to people that this sort of thing can happen? Because I'm completely convinced. I've spoken to you about this. I spoke to Wolfgang Halbig about it several times, the school safety inspector and the state trooper. I've had you on talking about it, your books, of course. How do we reach people, Jim, who think that we're just absolutely stone barking mad when we say that this school wasn't even operational? Because our friends, Jim, they come back and they go, they could never have kept something like that quiet. How did they manage to pull that off, Jim?
Well, it was a community operation. It looks as though FEMA, actually Department of Homeland Security, is giving contracts to different communities to perform these operations in order to promote gun control. They're being financed by American taxpayer money. In the instance of Sandy Hook, Richie, we actually found the two-day drill, the manual for the two-day drill, the FEMA manual, which I put in the book as a first appendix. So they had a rehearsal on the 13th, going live on the 14th. Would you believe there were so many confusion among the participants about the actual date that they put up donation sites already on the 13th, the day before the event, and even Adam Lanza's date of death was initially recorded as having happened on the 13th, making his feat in shooting 20 children and 6 adults the following day all the more remarkable.
Let's just go over that now. And again, for people who don't believe this, listen to what Jim Fetzer is telling you. It's an academic man, this man. In fact, Jim Fetzer is one of the few guys I've known. When he finds out some information that disproves something he previously believed, he's the first guy to come out and say, well, look, I found this, which I think is brilliant. So, Jim, so this was a drill from at the very beginning, this was a drill. Now, answer me this, my friend. Do you think that they always planned from the beginning to tell the American people that a lot of children had been murdered by somebody? Or do you think that came a bit later? When did they decide to do that too? When was the spoof? When was the hoax designed, do you think? At the beginning or later?
It appears to have been at least 2 years in the planning, Richie. They even brought in families to play the role of the survivors of the victims. But none of the children died there. There was no surge of EMTs into the building, no string of ambulances to rush the little bodies off to hospitals to be declared dead or alive. No medevac helicopter was called. In the beginning, it was confusing because we also had a sign, everyone must check in. Yeah. We had boxes of bottled water, pizza cartons in the firehouse, porta potties already there. Many were wearing name tags on lanyards, Richie. Parents were bringing children to the scene. But once you understand that these latter events, the sign, the bottled water, the porta potties, and that was all on the rehearsal day. No parent would bring a child to the scene of an actual child shooting massacre, but they were treating the rehearsal as a festive occasion.
Oh, Jim, it's staggering. It's staggering to think that, first of all, the malevolence of doing that, number one. Second of all, you know, to pull it off. We learned, of course, that the surviving children were taken to the Super Bowl, weren't they, Jim? But they were told at the Super Bowl, and of course that sounds like a lovely thing, these children who've suffered this trauma, you know, take them to the Super Bowl, give them a good day out. The children who went to the Super Bowl event, Jim, were told they can't ever speak about their experiences. Is that right, Jim?
Well, it's very peculiar, Richie, because attending a Super Bowl is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for children like that, but they didn't publish their names in the program for the Super Bowl. I mean, this was all completely concocted, completely propaganda to play on the emotions of the American people. Not only did none of the children die, but it appears that one of them even attended his own funeral, because what they did, Richie, was to take photographs of the kids who were about 10 years out of date. In other words, all the children in relation to the photographs were about 10 years older. which is identifiable from the clothing they were wearing, which was not in style at the time of this event, but was about a decade out of date. And one of them, Tommy Mattioli, actually attended his own funeral.
Tell me this, Jim. Again, listen, I believe this. I know in my heart of hearts that you're right. That doesn't sound very scientific, or it doesn't sound like a journalistic thing to say. I know you're right because I read your book. I've chatted with you about it. I've chatted to Wolfgang extensively about this as well. I know you guys are right. Why are they so bloody sloppy, Jim? Is the sloppiness down to arrogance, or is it down to just sloppiness? How do you explain that?
Well, they control the government, thereby control the investigative agencies. In this case, the Connecticut State Police were deeply involved. In fact, it's very ironic, Richie, because after the book was banned, InfoWars published an even more clear photograph of an Exhibit 26 in Chapter 8 where they were refurbishing the school.
That's right.
Which shows a SWAT team was already there, and just above the roof of the vehicle, you can see the string of four windows in Classroom 10. They're undamaged in the photograph, Richie, but after the shooting, one of them in particular would be shown to be shot out. You got the flag at full mast. You go down the flag and you look at, there's a man there leaning against the wall with his arms folded. It's Wayne Carver, the medical examiner, awaiting the arrival of his portable tent. And if you look closely, there's crime scene tape up. And yet it wouldn't occur until the following day.
Unbelievable, Jim. This is staggering stuff. All the evidence shows that this staged event, all the props were there the day before its people. And as Wolfgang Halbig says, Jim, you know, the having a foot in the school safety job and having a foot in the policeman's job, Wolfgang always... the first time I spoke to Wolfgang was on television in London 3 years ago, and he was in tears. He said, who could certify all those children as dead without going to see them?
And right. EMTs aren't qualified to determine someone is dead or alive. That requires a doctor. The whole thing was phony. They wouldn't even let the parents look at the children inside the classroom. They were purportedly left over, in the building until they were removed in the dead of night. That's ridiculous, Richie. So not only that, but when they tore down the building, they required everyone involved in the demolition to sign a lifetime gag order, so they could never talk about anything they saw or could or did not see, which I'm convinced would have included no blood on the floor and no bullet holes in the walls. I mean, this was a complete sham. If someone wants to get a short take, go to Sandy Hook. This is a YouTube. Sandy Hook starring Wayne Carver as the medical examiner, and they'll have no doubt about
it. Yeah, Claire, my producer, might find that on YouTube and tweet it, and I'll tweet it out there. Stephen Lash. Stephen is listening in Manchester, a mate of mine, and he asks, Jim, what was the overall goal of the Sandy Hook hoax, number one? And number two, was the goal achieved? Realized.
Well, the objective was illustrated on the 16th of January 2013. That's a month and 2 days after the event. 2000, where Obama signed no less than 26 executive orders to constrain our access to weapons under the Second Amendment, and where he introduced new mental health criteria. Now, the very idea was to use this as a very emotional, very traumatic event in order to promote the gun control agenda. It was a very cleverly designed psyop. And would you believe Hillary Clinton now is going to play it up at the convention that is just beginning now as we have come on the air. They graveled it to order as you brought me into the show, Richie.
Oh, Jim, you know, first of all, folks, I am going to speak to Jim a little bit about September 11th, a little bit later on. We've got Jim for about another 40 minutes. Jim might stay with us to the top of the hour unless he has to run. Marvellous, great form. As we say, Jim, in Britain here, good form, old son, good form for coming on the programme at the last minute and helping us out. Thrilled that you did that.
Here's something else your audience may find astonishing. There was a photograph that appeared to be a policewoman escorting children away from Sandy Hook during this crisis.
Yeah, I've seen that,
Jim. That was published on the front page of every newspaper in the country. But the fact is that there's a second photograph also taken by Shannon Hicks, who is the Newtown associate editor and photographer. And Richie, in this second photograph, you can see there's a string of parents there. They're looking on casually. They have their arms folded. They have their hands in their pocket. And guess what? The policewoman is rearranging the kids in the line to get a better shot. I mean, it's embarrassing. I thought that was so striking. I actually put the two photographs on the back cover Nobody Died at Sandy Hook of the book.
Jim, very quickly, or not very quickly, take as long as you want, explain to our listeners where they can get a copy of your book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook.
The right place is moonrockbooks.com, moonrockbooks.com. It was banned at Amazon. And I started to explain, actually, that classic photograph where the SWAT team is there, InfoWars put up an even more clear version of it, Richie. It was only up for 38 minutes. It already had 178 comments, and they took it down. And now it turns out they've actually gone into their files and removed it from the internet completely, so you can't retrieve it. Fortunately, some of us already had the copy. The reason is it gave the photo credit to the Connecticut State Police. And that's exactly right, Richie. See, they were keeping a record of everything they were doing. They never imagined it would get into the possession of the public.
Wow. Folks, Jim Fetzer is on the line, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. It's great to have him on. Moonrockbooks.com. That's where you'll find Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Unbelievable. We'll stay with this for another couple of minutes, a couple of quick questions, and then we'll have a chat then about the impending 15th anniversary of September the 11th and the seriousness of that and why it's so important that we keep talking about it. Tony tweets, excellent chat tonight. How do you, and Jim, this is the $64,000 question. How do you keep so many people quiet? Surely there would be leaks and people speaking out. Now, I know the answer to this. People have disappeared, haven't they, Jim?
Well, around 15 people. In fact, we've just published a second edition of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, including several chapters by Tony Mead, one on the disappearing witnesses, Richie. But the bottom line is this. The news was actually doing a fairly good report. We had one that Adam Lanza did not even appear to exist. You can even still find it on YouTube. But once the Connecticut State Police, during the press conference held by Wayne Carver, announced that they would prosecute anyone who challenged the official account, people started to clam up. We originally had residents who were saying they thought it was very odd any kids were there because the school had been abandoned. They didn't understand why there should have been anyone there. And they were completely right. They took an abandoned school. They conducted a drill, presented it as a live event, and then promoted it for gun control. And now Hillary Clinton is going to bring in, you know, the daughter of the principal. And get this. The Newtown Bee, which is this little community newspaper, had an interview with the principal, Don Hofspring, that it actually had prepared for publication on the 13th, the day before the shooting. When they actually published it on the 14th, no one could understand how they could have done it because she was the first person shot and killed. Hillary Clinton is going to feature her daughter on during the Republican National Convention to try to manipulate the American people feeling so grief-stricken over the deaths of these little kids that they're going to support gun control, which is completely ludicrous in this day and age, Richie. The American country, the nation of the United States, has a long history. We could not have emancipated ourselves from the British if we didn't have citizen soldiers. The highest-ranking military advisor to Emperor Hirohito recommended against invading because there'd be a sniper behind every bush. If we have a nuclear war with Russia, Washington, D.C., and New York will be the first cities taken out. And any community that cannot defend itself will be vulnerable to marauding gangs who want to rape and loot and pillage. This is incredibly stupid. Not only that, Richie, but the gun violence in this country has been dropping steadily over the last 20 years from 1993 to 2014,
that's right,
the
Jim.
Deaths from gun violence in this country dropped by more than 50% and injuries from gun violence by more than 75%.
And I've seen those statistics as well. And those are not National Rifle Association statistics. They are not. They are statistics that have been garnered through police reports, through hospital admission reports. Jim is absolutely right to say that. In fact, I mentioned earlier on, you're still more likely to be killed by a falling grand piano than you are by somebody with a gun. And we laugh at that, but it's absolutely true. Jim, what does Hillary Clinton have to do to go to prison? Do you know, we reported today, RT reported today as well, and yesterday, that trawling through Hillary Clinton's emails shows that when the Greek debt crisis was at its zenith, Jim, she was emailing her son-in-law classified information, basically giving him the ability or giving him license to commit insider trading, right? Making bets on the Greek debt crisis that made tens of millions of dollars. I mean, it doesn't get any more corrupt than that. Confidential State Department emails about Greece and about bailouts. Her son-in-law, Chelsea's husband, was getting emails from her. He was making bets on the stock market with that information. This has come to light over the weekend. And I don't see her in handcuffs anytime.
That's completely outrageous. Those emails also show that the true reasons for invading Libya and slaughtering the people were because the Western banking interests,
that's
you can
right.
read that, Rothschilds, were upset that he was introducing the gold dinar, and the French wanted to preserve Africa as their own neo-colonial preserve. It had nothing to do with Hillary abusing, with Gaddafi abusing the Libyan people. On the contrary, he was going to be given a humanitarian award by the United Nations the following week. And get this, Richie, which most people don't know. Gaddafi was surrendering. He was flying in a, he was driving in a convoy under a white flag to a location designated by the Department of State under Hillary's control, but she was upset by the idea of what he might have to say before the International Criminal Court in The Hague, and therefore she had his convoy attacked. He was brutally murdered, castrated, and sodomized. And then Hillary cackled about it. She said, "We came, we saw he died." This was one of the most gross offenses ever committed by the American government.
Jim, she's going to be president, isn't she? And Donald Trump has been acting as a stalking horse for her. And I reckon in the next few weeks, Trump will say more and more and more outrageous things. Won't he?
Richie, I think you're wrong about this.
Go on,
Let me tell you. Let me tell you what's going on here with these conventions, because I follow them very closely. The Republican was expected to be highly divided, but by the appointment of this fellow Pence, Trump actually brought great unanimity to the Republican Party. The Democrats were expected to be united, but the revelations of these emails from the Democratic National Committee show Debbie Wasserman Schultz was trying to sabotage Bernie's campaign and benefit Hillary. It's become increasingly outrageous. The Democrats are now very much divided. And here's something, too, Richie, to take into account. We now have a resurgence of the third and fourth party, the Libertarian Party, Gary Johnson, and the Green Party, Jill Stein. The Libertarian is already up to about 12%. Stein is at 5% and climbing rapidly. What that means is we're going to have a three or four party contest during the campaign. What that means is it's highly probable that none of the candidates will get the 270 electoral votes necessary to win the election outright, which means it'll be thrown into the House of Representatives, which is overwhelmingly dominated by Republicans, Richie. They're not going to pick Hillary Clinton.
Right. Well, that's probably the only thing we'll disagree on tonight. I respect your opinion on that. I know our mutual friend, the great Maria Heller, fantastic broadcaster. I know Maria shares your thoughts and your philosophy on that. So Sandy Hook, Jim, and we saw there was another shooting in Florida today. There was a shooting in Florida in a nightclub a couple of weeks back.
Let's talk about that, Richie.
Just before we talk about that, my contention is about these events, Jim. You're absolutely right. They're about civil liberties and they're about the Second Amendment. But they're also about massive trauma, aren't they? Massive trauma on the psyche of, I mean, you referred to it earlier as a psyop, on the psyche of the collective population, because people get terrified, and it's the old David Icke thing, problem, reaction, solution. The people go screaming to the powers that be, demanding a solution, Jim, and they've already got one. Well, we'll make it more difficult for you to have a gun, we'll have more surveillance. And Jim, how many times have we spoken over the years on programmes like this, you and I, about Posse Comitatus, it's the 1933 Act, that is to protect the people from the military acting as an occupying force on U.S. soil. The bloody police, Jim, these days, they look like the army.
It's actually 1878, Richie.
Was it 1878,
Jim? One more point about, we just had the release Trump has taken a huge 6-point bounce after the convention. He's now leading Hillary 48-45. He's up 6. She's down 4. That's basically a 10-point swing since the convention. And I guarantee you, because of this scandal, the Bernie Sanders supporters are outraged. You're not going to get unanimity out of the Democratic convention. It's going to remain split. I'm telling you. I'm predicting Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States.
We're going
turn to Orlando. Richie, I have looked at these extensively in collaboration. The license for the Pulse Club expired in 2013. The legal occupancy was 150. There were only 11 parking spaces there. They claimed 50 died, 53 were injured. In that case, there should have been 70, 80 or more abandoned automobiles because the drivers were either dead or in the hospital. Get this, I have a correspondent who resides in the area, and she told me the Pulse wasn't even a gay club.
Now, Jim, hang on a second. Now, I'm going to take issue with the car park. Because it's a nightclub, Jim, most people are getting taxis or buses to the venue, no?
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
This was basically an abandoned club, Richie.
Right. No. I'm saying if we were to believe the real story. Yeah, yeah.
Here's something else. The police claimed they couldn't identify the patrons, but it was a club that served alcohol. You had to have a photo ID to even gain admission. Then you have all these clowns who are, amateur actors who are carrying supposedly injured toward the club instead of away from the club.
And when they
got out of the camera view, they put him down and they all kind of danced around because they felt they'd done their part of contributing. We even have a video on Spanish television showing a bunch of these crisis actors climbing in the bus to go home.
Do you know what's incredible, Jim? One of the things, when that went down, that so-called shooting at that nightclub, it was in early July, wasn't it? It was early this month or late June, early July. And I'm thinking, how can the guy get the sort of hardware that he was supposed to have used into a nightclub without arousing suspicion from the obviously highly trained door staff in a city that's famous over the years for having, drug problems and having a big drug culture, particularly around nightclubs? How could he just walk past the bloody security staff? Incredible,
yeah,
really.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing's ridiculous.
Ridiculous, let me
tell you about a couple more cases. We had this shooting of this man in Baton Rouge. I have a collaborator who lives in New Orleans. He checked it out. The guy was a sex offender. It turns out, according to the official records on him, he died on February 15th of this year. But it's even worse than that. When you do a close-up of him lying on the ground after the cops have shot him, there's an unexploded blood packet. It's like a baggie full of blood on his chest. I mean, this is what they do with Hollywood actors, Richie. They have these little tiny blood packets on their bodies.
And you can
so
see
that when
this
they're
clearly
presumably shot, they set off a minor explosive and the blood comes spurting out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Most people aren't actually being killed. I mean, it would be very difficult to get actors for your films and the Screen Actors Guild wouldn't stand for it. But this is like at Boston bombing. I mean, they had amputee actors, Richie. It's outrageous. You look through the smoke. You've had this noise go off and a lot of smoke, but not much explosive force. I say that as a former Marine Corps artillery officer. There wasn't enough explosive force to kill anyone. And when you zoom in on the bodies, yes, they're missing arms and legs, but there is no blood. As Lorraine Day, who was the chief of trauma surgery in San Francisco General Hospital for 25 years, has observed, that is a physiological impossibility. If they had arms and legs blown off by an explosion, there'd be blood all over the place. But the blood only starts showing up later, Richie, and it's Hollywood blood. It comes out of tubes. Get this. Nathan Foulkes, who's a Hollywood producer and director who identified one of the key players, a tall guy in a cowboy hat.
That's right. Yeah, we had him on this show, and you had him.
Yeah,
you put me in touch with him. That's right.
He cast in one of his own films, was the first to tell me that he thought they'd use a smoke machine. So we went all over the photos and the videos, and we found the smoke machine. Richie, I was so stunned, I put it on the back cover of the book, and nobody died in Boston either,
Let's just pause there and just repeat what we just said there, because it might have gone over the heads of some of our listeners. Jim is referring to the Hollywood producer, Nathan Foulkes, who Jim introduced to me 18 months ago to get him on this programme. He's a friend of Jim's and Jim has interviewed him. He's the genuine article. You can find him on the Internet Movie Database website, imdb.com. Nathan recognised a guy as a crisis actor at the Boston bombing, a guy that Nathan had used in a television series. This is an absolute fact.
The guy with actually was in a regular film.
In a film, was it?
And his credits should have been up there. When I checked it, they blocked him out. So if you went to that webpage, you'd only see the major actors, the top four. He was in a supporting role. They'd obliterated all of that, Richie. This is how outrageous it has become. The government can act in such a blatant fashion because very few people are going to figure it out. Most Americans don't have the time or the inclination. They're too busy trying to get enough food to keep it on the money to get food on the table and a roof over their head.
Yeah.
And they're just played. All of the media are telling them the same thing. And they figure, well, if that's wrong, someone would be talking about it. Well, we are, but they haven't discovered the alternative media yet. I mean, this is completely outrageous.
Jim, I hate to say this, right, but I'm going to say it anyway. Isn't it easier for these lunatics? Isn't it much, much easier in terms of the logistics to just kill people, Jim, using these lunatic mind-controlled people that they have used in the past? It's easier, no?
Why? They learned after 9/11, Richie, that when you kill people, they have family and relatives who don't let it go. In this case, it was the Jersey girls. These were four women who were widows of men who died on 9/11. They put pressure on Bush and Cheney, who weren't even going to convene a 9/11 commission. They put it off for 441 days until it became politically impossible to withstand. And then they appointed Philip Zelikow to be the head of the commission, where Zelikow, whose area of academic specialization before he became its executive director was the creation and maintenance of public myths, M-Y-T-H-S. He completed a draft of the book a year before he shared it with any member of the staff, before they'd even done their so-called investigation. The whole thing was a complete and total sham. And when Bush and Cheney finally agreed to testify before the 9/11 commission, it was with the conditions that they not testify under oath, that there be no transcript, no records, no notes taken, and that they could come together. You would have thought we were interrogating mafia dons, not the president and vice president of the United States.
Oh, Jim, I'll never forget that. As a broadcaster, and of course I worked on 9/11, and I broadcasted for a mainstream commercial radio station, and I still feel bad about it today. We told people the lies that the mainstream told. I mean, we didn't know they were lies.
Of course. Yeah. Listen, I was at home, and when I saw the two towers destroyed, I said to myself, that's not even physically possible. But I said to myself, too, and I remember this so clearly, I couldn't imagine I'd ever be in the position to do anything about it. I would eventually found Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, publish its first book, The 9/11 Conspiracy. Now we're publishing the second book, America Nuked on 9/11, Richie. It's stunning. But there's a mass of evidence that actually it was done with mini or micro nukes, which is why the destruction was so complete and thorough. One of the telling signs of the use of nukes is that everything is converted into very fine dust. Lower Manhattan was simply covered with very fine dust. And now it turns out the U.S. Geological Survey did research on the contents of the dust, and they found it was loaded with all kinds of elements that would not have been present had this not been a nuclear event, including barium and strontium, thorium and uranium, lithium, lanthanum, yttrium, chromium, tritium. It's all documented in this book, Richie. I think a lot of your listeners might be fascinated to get the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but about 9/11 at last.
We're approaching, I tell you what I'm going to do, Jim. I'm going to take a 60-second break. When we come back then,
Richie, the only catch is I've got to go to another show in 11 minutes.
Right, I'll tell you what, we won't take a break then. We'll stay with you for another 5 or 6 minutes max. That'll give you a chance to quickly do a turn.
Okay, I can make the transition effortlessly. I
know you can.
45 to a quarter of the hour.
It's brilliant, Jim, for you to come on at short notice. So we're approaching the 15th anniversary then.
Let me tell you something about Dallas. This is particularly absurd. It turns out that a lot of the photographs for Dallas were staged in advance. The Wall Street Journal actually published a photograph of about six officers in front of what looked like a huge wall, two giant colonnades extending upwards, that was available already in the midnight, the day of the event, where Dr. William Mount obtained a copy. He was suspicious because the whole event had only begun at, well, it was actually 9:30 my time central, about 7:30 his time, that we were getting reports of any officers down. And when he calculated how long it would have taken to write the articles, produce them, get the paper process and all that, it was too fast. They had to do it in advance, and I'll tell you why. We now have a Google Earth photograph of the exact location, and the wall is actually relatively low. The colonnades only extend up so high. They cropped the photograph to make it look like they went up and up and up. They had to expand the size of the background to impose the images of the officers, and get this, Richie. They have these orange attachments. These are blank adapters on their weapons so they can't fire live rounds. The whole thing was staged. I mean, it's an embarrassment, but there it is.
Amazing, Jim. I was going to say we're 15 years now. I can remember it like it was yesterday because I'd never been involved in anything like that as a presenter before. We took the lunchtime presenter off. We took the drive time presenter off. And we began, my presenter and myself began broadcasting for hours. And we were bringing people on from New York City, people whom we knew, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, prominent Irish people in the city whom we knew, people working for the fire brigade, the fire service and stuff like that. And we did all that, and all the press releases were coming in from the wires telling us that the chief suspect was Osama bin Laden. We just put that out there, and we never thought about it. We never thought about questioning it. But I have a question for you, and it's from my producer. And it's a question that she's always had about September the 11th. She says, Richie, ask Jim, why didn't the people behind it, why didn't they say that the terrorists had rigged the towers with explosives, number one? And number two, even though that's might not be the case, but why didn't they say that? Number two, why didn't the people behind it say that the 19 terrorists were Iraqi and Afghan? Those two things would have made the story slightly more believable. I've never understood how unbelievable the official story was. So why didn't they do that? That's a very good question, Jim.
Well, there was a lot of security, actually. I mean, when Larry Silverstein took control of the World Trade Center just 6 weeks before the event, he not only fired the firm that had provided security since it was originally opened in 1970, but he hired an Israeli firm, Kroll Associates, to provide security. The fact is, it would have been very, very difficult for anyone to have got in there. They appear to have used the claim that they were doing an elevator renovation to install the explosives in a sophisticated arrangement so they could set them off in a sequence. Let me give you an illustrative example, not corresponding exactly how it was done. But with the North Tower, you had 110 floors. So if you could set off mini or micro nukes that take out a cube of 10 floors per second, then it would be accomplished in 11 seconds in the South Tower because the top three cubes tilted to the side and were blown as 1:09. Those are the times that were given by the NIST. So they would have had a lot more explaining to do. They wanted to claim that this was all a total surprise. And, you know, it would have been incredibly awkward if the security had been so lax. Larry Silverstein, by the way, also got a new insurance policy with an anti-terrorist clause. So he could claim there were two planes, which incidentally took down three buildings, allegedly, and that was double indemnity. He got over $4.4 billion on a $114 million investment. Now, with regard to the hijackers, yes, 19, 15 were actually from Saudi Arabia. The number from Iraq was zero. Now, there were Israeli art students here, actually Mossad agents, who were tracking the alleged hijackers. But the stunning fact is, Richie, that a half a dozen or more of these guys turned up alive and well and made contact with the British media the following day. In fact, it turns out all four of the crash sites were fabricated or faked, albeit in different ways, which means that no passengers died in crashes that did not take place. And that there were no suicide hijackers aboard those planes that caused them to crash, which means the whole war on terror is predicated on a false premise. And I have substantiated this in many different places, including the new book. But you can also find online The Real Deal, episode number 100, The 9/11 Crash Sites, where I do an interview with Major General Albert Stubblebine, U.S. Army retired, formerly in charge of all U.S. military signals and photographic intelligence. And then in The Real Deal, episode 103, 9/11, who was responsible and why, with Dennis Camino, where we go through all the evidence about the transfer of the World Trade Center to private hands for the first time, urban moving system, the role of Kroll and the other agencies, Odego messaging system, which was putting out warnings. I even had a little old lady from Brooklyn call me, Richie, and tell me how her rabbi had warned the synagogue not to go into Lower Manhattan that day. And she was very, very worried about it. But this was happening all over the place. I mean, the 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, most of whom were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens and the Mossad. But the 28 pages has created great controversy because it's reignited the issue.
It's been brilliant. Yeah, it's been brilliant.
So it's making a real difference. So I actually begin the book by talking about the release by the Saudi new agency of their assertion. They were so offended by legislation passing through the Congress that would allow American citizens to sue them for their complicity in 9/11. The Saudi press announced that on 9/11, the United States attacked the United States.
I tell you what, my friend, we'll leave it there for now, right? But I'll be back in touch with you in the next couple of weeks. I want to thank you for jumping in, Jim, at the last minute. Brilliant information on Sandy Hook, on the Orlando non-shooting a few weeks back, the Florida shootings today, and all of these shootings and these trauma events. Give our listeners, again, the website where people can buy Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. What's the website, Jim?
Thanks, Richie. It's moonrockbooks.com, and the Boston book and the 9/11 book are available there too. I can't thank you enough.
Ah, listen, you did me a huge favor, mate. You're a great sport, Jim. Love to chat with you, and I can't wait to do it again real soon. Rest of your day. Thanks, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Bye for now. The great Jim Fetzer on the line to us there from Madison, Wisconsin. Good stuff, Jim. Can't go wrong with that. Loads of questions, loads of tweets, but there was so much in what Jim was saying there, I really couldn't interrupt him. But what I do want to say again, just to go back on what I was saying earlier on, it is possible you might be listening to the program for the first time, or you may not have heard me talk about it before. But I was working at WLRFM in Ireland back in September 2001. I'd been producing the mid-morning talk program there at that stage for the best part of, well, the best part of 2 years, I suppose, at that stage. We had finished our program on the Tuesday and we'd gone to lunch and we're coming back from lunch. I'd been meeting somebody at the Granville Hotel, which is on the quay in Waterford, and my presenter had gone his own way. But we arrived back in the building at the same time and our head of news at the time said to us, you need to come into the newsroom, where we had multiple televisions, of course, and said, look, there's a big event happening in New York. And at the time, the first plane had hit, but the second plane hadn't hit. And we were looking at this footage, this live shot, as we were looking at it, of a hole in, I should remember now whether the North or the South Tower was hit first, I can't remember which one. And it was watching that we saw, we think we saw, maybe we did see, maybe we didn't see, but the second plane hit. And at that stage, then it started to come in from the Associated Press. It started coming in from Reuters and everywhere else that there was a major terrorist attack in Manhattan. And of course, this was unlike anything anybody'd ever seen before. We ran then to put together basically, as I said, taking the presenters whom were due to do the lunchtime, and well, the lunchtime show was on air, the show that had followed us was on air, and then you had the drive time show. We took these guys off air and we started broadcasting and covering this and trying to get as many people on the phone live from New York City and from New Jersey as we possibly could, and that's what we did. And I remember, and I've told this story too many times to bore you with it again, but I do remember sometime later reading Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center Disaster by David Icke and feeling very embarrassed at the fact that when they were saying things like, well, you know, the prime suspect for this would be a guy called Osama bin Laden, and we just put that out there, like all the rest of them. We just put it out there. Yeah, this guy called bin Laden, he was involved in an attack on a US warship in the past, and he's rumoured to be involved in all sorts of terror plots around the world, Indonesia, Europe, all sorts of stuff like that. He's on the FBI's most wanted list. Turned out for a while he wasn't. That all became a bit muddy and a bit messy a bit later on. But that's what we did. And when I look at it now, and we do a lot of criticising the mainstream media on this programme, and sometimes we name the journalists. Sometimes we're very hard on them. And I think, well, sometimes I think, you know, you've got a bit of a cheek there, Richie Allen, to be overly critical of a presenter on television today in the mainstream. You were very quick to take what you were given and regurgitate what you were given back in 2001. So it's easy for me to do that. Or was easy for me to do that then. It's now easy for me to criticise them now. Back in a minute.
You want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now. Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
I do have an opinion on some of the big arguments in the independent media about September the 11th over the years. I don't think... And I've had this out with Jim on the programme before. I'm not sure about mini nuclear devices. I'm not sure about that. I'm also not sure about alternative energy weapons. Now, I know Judy Wood wrote a book some years ago about this. I interviewed Judy Wood on the radio in Spain some years ago. Judy has become, well, she's become a bit odd these days. She won't do interviews unless she's given certain guarantees about the types of questions that she's going to be asked. So, of course, that is like a red rag to a bull for most presenters. So that precludes her then from coming on the programme. Coming on this programme anyway. I wouldn't have Judy Wood on the programme. Now, Claire, my producer, had an interesting exchange with Judy Wood recently where Wood was very, very rude and very diva-esque in her behaviour. I can't say for a fact that directed energy weapons don't exist. I can't say that. To me, and my YouTube editor, Simon, is a long-time believer that there were holographic planes and that planes didn't hit the buildings. Again, I wouldn't dare dismiss that as an idea or in any way try to diminish the theory by Simon. But I don't buy it. I believe that the planes were guided into the building somehow. That technology's been around a long time. You know, the uninterruptible autopilot technology that Field McConnell, for example, has spoken about on this program. I think the planes were taken over. And I think people did die on those planes. But I'm with Richard Gage. I think, you know, the most likely theory, the most likely probability is that we know sniffer dogs were taken away from the building for weeks before the actual plane crashes. Weeks before that, dogs that are trained to detect explosive devices were taken off duty. excuse me, I'm just taking a big slug of water. So I've always believed they took over the planes, crashed them into the buildings, and the buildings had already been preloaded with the sort of explosives that you would need to take them down. However, I'm not dogmatic, because the concrete effectively turns to dust, and your regular explosives that you would use in demolition wouldn't do that. Am I an expert in that? No, I'm not. But over the years, I've interviewed people on the radio shows and on the television shows whom have worked for demolition companies. And they've said, yeah, the concrete turning to dust is a strange one, that. And that's where Jim is going. And I think that's where Judy Wood is going. But I think, look, for me, Sean McTee is saying on Twitter there, nanothermite. Yeah, possibly. Possibly, you know. But I'm not sure about directed energy weapons or mini nuclear devices. But what the hell do I know? I think Tony tweeted earlier on about a seismic, excuse me, about a shock wave and a seismic reading. It would have been a seismic event, so there would have been a reading of that. That's also a fair point as well. I just don't know, really. I just don't know. Tell you what I do know. I'm going to take some music back in a minute then, kind of more or less to wrap up. You're with the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Right, that's the New Radicals, and you get what you give on the Richie Allen Show. It's Monday, July 25th, 2016. Eventful old programme, this one. I know a lot of you, through contacting me today, were really keen to hear Richard Souder. It's actually Souder, Richard says, on the programme. But he had all sorts of technical problems in Ecuador. He's convinced that there was a bit of tampering going on. He might be right. I'm not sure about that. Things do go wrong from time to time, but Richard is a good guy. We'll try and work something out with him and get him on the programme again real soon. Jim Fetzer was an amazingly good sport to jump in, by the way. Wonderful, wonderful guy. Stephen Lash tweets that Tesla always said he could bring down a building using resonance. Using resonance, yeah, using a directed energy, using a sound weapon against it. I absolutely, look, my mind is totally open. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying that just given all the things I've read and seen, I fancy that the planes were real and there were people in them. I know there are documentaries out there. I know there are documents out there. People like John Lear and other people say the plane didn't take off. I'm well aware of all of this and I'm not dismissing it. I'm just saying where I am at the moment is planes hit the buildings and then the buildings were brought down by controlled explosives. I think it is always worth debating it. You know, not falling out about it is important, but it's worth debating it, of course. But ultimately, what it was about, why it happened, I think is beyond debate and beyond dispute. And that's the most important thing. I know it's important. How they did it is important, of course. But what supersedes that in importance terms is why they did it, what came afterwards, and what's planned for the future. So that's it then for the programme. I'm going to get out of here. The programme was an interesting one, I think. Thanks for listening to it. Great Jim Fetzer jumping in at the last minute. Thanks to my producer, Claire Calvey, to Simon Stewart for YouTube work, and to Aaron and everybody else associated with the programme. Coming up in a couple of minutes is a brand new Power of Healing meditation from the lovely Kim Hutchison at livingasyoursoul.com. That follows me in a couple of minutes. Thanks very much for listening. We'll do it all again tomorrow at 8 p.m. BST, as usual, on The Richie Allen Show. Going to leave you with this from Bon Jovi. I was asked to play this for Greg. He's a big fan of Bon Jovi. Play any Bon Jovi, he said, so I dug this one out. Until tomorrow, bye for now. Thanks for sticking with it. Bye now.
Play some blues for me, man.
I got the blues.